Hello, I'm Shalom.
And I'm Courtney.
We're the Happy Hipsters.
And this is Almost Nerdy. We love sci-fi, we love fantasy, we love all things nerdy.
And we are about to spoil this movie for you, so make sure you've already watched it. Hey guys, welcome to Almost Nerdy, episode 5.
Order of the Phoenix.
Yes.
Join the resistance.
Lots of depression and death and...
And resistance.
Revolution.
Kind of, not really revolution. More like fighting evil. Speaking of fighting evil, so... In Harry Potter world, there is magic that can cure pretty much everything.
Mm.
You know, Mr. Weasley gets injured here, St. Mungo's, all of that.
Yeah.
But we are raising money in real life for a real hospital. It is a nonprofit hospital, CHOP Children's Hospital, Philadelphia. Mm. We are almost 25% of the way there to our goal. Yeah. So please, please help us hit our goal of reaching at least $250. We're hoping our stretch goal is $500.
Yeah.
Magic doesn't exist in the real world, but we as people can help bring amazing, amazing magical cures to people in real life, children, by donating money. So we are raising money for the Children's Fund. This fund is for kids in dire need, so they are able to allocate money quickly to children who need it the most.
Yeah.
You can find more info on the link in our bio on our Instagram page, the underscore happy underscore hipsters on Instagram. Mm. We have a page. You can donate straight there. It really is a great cause.
Yes.
Thank you so much for considering it.
Mm-hmm.
We are closing this on April 9th. That day is coming up real fast. So if you would like to give...
Yeah.
Please do so soon.
So cool. So cool. And we're getting there. Like, it's something we're very, like, excited about doing often with our podcast. And just doing, like, tying our podcast to a cause.
Yeah.
And it really makes it so much, like, more worth doing.
Yeah.
So. Awesome. So we're going to do character catch-up.
The Ministry has taken the stance that Voldemort is not back and are attacking both Harry and Dumbledore, so the wizarding world won't believe their warnings. In an attempt to discredit them, Dementors are sent after Harry, Umbridge is given free reign of Hogwarts, and Harry is punished for speaking out. Meanwhile, Dumbledore has reformed the Order of the Phoenix to start an anti-Voldemort movement. At Hogwarts, the students start Dumbledore's army to learn to defend themselves. Harry is plagued by visions of Voldemort's obsessions, finally leading to a vision of Sirius being tortured by Voldemort in the Hall of Prophecy. When Harry gets to the Hall of Prophecy with some of the DA, he finds the vision was planted and Sirius wasn't in danger at all. Sirius dies during an altercation between the Death Eaters and the Order of the Phoenix. Fudge sees Voldemort in person and is forced to admit that he was wrong and Voldemort is back.
He's back. Oh, fudge. This book is very unbelievable if you read it in like the 90s or something. Because like, I mean, there are similar situations kind of with Hitler and everything, but the denial that the Ministry has of the reality of Voldemort is amazing. If I'd read this in the 90s, I would be like, or even like, if I'd read this like 10 years ago, I would have been like, this is not real at all. But now seeing people deny global warming, seeing like, and the way, even though there's so much proof and just the persistence and the stubbornness is something that I would have never believed if I had not seen it in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really impressive that she really created such a, like, borderline unrealistic scenario at like during a time when no one was really talking about some of these hot button topics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have such a love-hate relationship with this book.
Mm.
I love it in many ways because I feel like it is I think it's a really good presentation of, like, emotion and, like, processing and, like, grief. In a lot of ways, grief. Which I think are hard things to talk about, especially with children. It, you know, this is a children's novel series. So it's like, I think those are things that are hard to talk about. So there are times when I read this book, listen to this book, watch this movie, and I'm like, bro, I get you. I totally get you. And sometimes I'm like, Harry, freaking get over yourself. Let's go to some counseling. Let's work through our issues and let's get going. But,
oh my god!
So I do love this movie. I do hate this movie. It's kind of a weird relationship.
Yeah, I hear that. I hear that. It's interesting, and I'm very excited to talk about, like, even the movie and how that connects. Because she's definitely, like, she's a version of Mr. Rogers. Like, she dives into subjects that no one else really wanted to talk with kids about.
That's true.
And so, like, she really dives into, like, some really huge topics. And she doesn't, like, she really stays in the moment. She's like, if it's grief, like, that scene where it's Dumbledore and Harry after Sirius dies.
Oh.
That's one of the most intense scenes ever. And there's, like, a tension. There is, it's... You know, it's very, it's the heat, it heats up.
Yeah.
It really cools down at the end, and you're like, wow. And that's just how grief works.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. There are certain parts of this book that I just, like, freaking love. I just love it so much. And there's some parts that are just, it's hard to get through.
Yeah.
So, are you ready to rate it?
Let's rat it.
Rats.
Let's rat it.
The rating and testing system is about to be put on the Order of Phoenix. This movie... We're doing the movie, can get up to 5 stars. Mm-hmm. So you can get a star for script and storyline. You can get a star for acting. We have cinematography, the essence of the book, and the X Factor. So basically, Shalom and I rate it, and then we average it, and that is the score that this movie is going to get.
Yep.
So let's start with scripting. What would you give this?
All right. With scripting, I would give it 3/4.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's good. It's good. It's well, like, for as a movie, it's good. It's good. I have some stuff that I'll talk about later with the essence, but if I just look at it, it's good. I remove a quarter because it's an adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna remove a quarter for just how it doesn't match up to the adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason. Mm-hmm. But if you were to watch it, when I watched it, just watching it, like, before I read the books, I was like, this is good. This is fun to watch.
Yeah.
So, yeah. 3/4.
For scripting storyline, I give it a full star. I can see why you took away a quarter. And I think that I take those points away in the essence part of it. Because as a standalone film, in the way that they adapted it, everything makes sense. Whereas I think when you look at Goblet of Fire, like when we talked about Goblet of Fire... They tried to stay true to the book, but in that, then their script didn't make sense. In this way, they there were changes.
Yeah.
For example, I think Cho Chang is a great example.
Mm-hmm.
So the changes that they made by taking Marietta out, that's how they make the breakup happen with Harry. So they took out a couple scenes that they didn't have time for and instead make her the snitch. And so in her doing that, then that becomes the reason why Harry breaks up with her. So it's like, I feel like they were very thoughtful in the way they were like, okay, this needs to happen, and this needs to happen. And in order for those to happen, because we changed this, now we need to change that. But they all make it, everything makes sense, I feel like.
I hear that.
So I did think, standing alone, you can watch this movie. I don't think anything's confusing. I think the pacing feels pretty good. Overall, I thought the script made sense. So I give them a full star. What do you give for acting?
For acting, I'll give one. That's one. Like, you know, in all honesty, like, expect a one for each of these movies from me. Umbridge, as much as annoying as the character is, well executed.
Very well executed.
All the characters really are impressive. You know, there's so much growth. Hermione's impressive, you know, and you're dealing with a very different phase in the series. You know, it's a very darker phase. Yeah. And I feel like they did a great job in like acting it out and delivering. And that was awesome. I love Kingsley. Like he's awesome. Like his delivery on that one line, you know, Dumbledore's got style. That was so good. Like you need that break. That was a nice break from an intense moment where Dumbledore, you know, confesses in quotes to being the leader of Dumbledore's army, and how he like escapes, and it's kind of like a dark moment. Yeah. And he just, his delivery, he takes his time with it. He doesn't rush it. The way he says it is, it allows us to kind of breathe. Yeah. And I thought that was, like, that was awesome. So acting, a one.
I also gave this a one. I thought overall, good job. Yeah. You know, it's one of those movies where it's like, there was no moment that I felt was unbelievable. Mm, mm. Again, I think I'm going to hit. I took off points for essence, and there's like a few things that I would talk about, but I don't think that's necessarily the actor's fault. Like, I was originally considering taking off a little bit of points because I didn't feel like Harry was angry enough, but I also don't think that it was scripted that way.
It wasn't.
So it's kind of like, I don't necessarily think that that's their fault. Mm-hmm. I didn't think that Cho was sad enough, but again, I don't think that it was scripted that way. I don't think it's their fault. Like, Ginny is really written out of this. Like, you don't see a lot of her personality. Again, not the actor's fault. Mm. A lot of it's the scripting.
Yeah.
So it's like, although the script was good and I liked the script, again, I think it's more of an essence thing than anything else. Mm-hmm. So what about cinematography?
I'll give it a one. It's just a weird phase. You know, it's like the technology wasn't at the level. I mean, there are amazing movies like Avatar and all these movies that are coming out. But I'll be fair. Like, I think they did the best they could with the series. They're doing like what, 8 movies?
Right? Yeah, there's 8 of them.
8 movies, and they're trying to do their best. And I can see them. I can see excellence in what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. I have complaints as to things I wish they would have done, but we'll touch on essence again. I thought they did what they could.
So for cinematography, I took off a quarter star. So I gave it 3/4. And I took it away for one scene because I think overall this – I really liked what they did cinematography-wise. I thought this movie was really beautiful to watch. I really loved their color palette. That filter they had, that, like, blue filter, I thought that really brought the feel together.
Yeah.
I liked a lot of the, like, set dressings, a lot of things like that. I thought they did a, like, phenomenal job.
Mm.
And then you have these beautiful scenes, like the scene where all the kids are learning Patronuses and the Patronuses are jumping around. And then you have another, like, you have the fight between Voldemort and Dumbledore at the very end at the Ministry of Magic. Like, again, a beautiful, beautiful scene.
Mm.
And then on top of that, like, I really liked these, like, weird visions that Harry's having. So it's like he's having these visions, like he's seeing Voldemort. And he looks in the mirror and he has Voldemort's head. Like, I love that. Like, I really, really love that because I think they had a very hard challenge in that a lot of this book is very internal. It's a lot of internal processing and they had to visualize that, right? So when you get to the part where Voldemort possesses Harry and you have this weird, like, Voldemort is, like, clearly in front of, like, a green screen just, like, dancing about, like, just being a weirdo. Like, I was like, what is that? Like, what am I even looking at right now? Like, that looked so incredibly out of place in comparison to the rest of the movie that I was like, it just felt lazy to me. Like, that just felt lazy. I was like, what? Like, what are you even doing right now? So I did take off a quarter star because of that, because I felt like that was really disappointing to me.
Yeah, I hear that. Some of these, like, things, it's like, The characters you have nowadays, the villains you have nowadays, are very deep, you know? So you can do more with them. Like, the expressions they can do, the things, movements that they do that are, like, very, like, more believable, if that makes sense. Mm. And I feel like at that time, it's like the villain does typical things, encircles his victim and does talks a certain way and reveals his whole plan. And like these typical things, and I feel like yeah, like these guys are stuck in a you know time box or whatever.
That's
you know,
true.
Where they're kind of like their villain is typical, kind of has typical, or rather has typical tendencies, which to them, what makes them the villain, you know, they have to do those weird things. And so
I'm just speaking about just in particular, it's those little cut twos of of Voldemort clearly in front of a green screen. Like to me, I was like, you did all this beautiful cinematography and then you just have something that is just clearly a dude standing in front of a green screen. And that I felt super out of place. I was like, when you have the rest of the movie look a certain way and then you have these weird flashes, cinematography-wise, I thought that was a very strange choice.
Also, you mean, you don't like the fact that, it does look like a green screen in that moment?
Okay, yeah.
I hear that.
That was the part. It's not necessarily, because I think Voldemort is the type of villain who wants you to appreciate how smart he is, how cunning he is, all these things. Uh-huh. So it's it is fitting for him to do the things that he's doing. So I'm not against that. It's those I feel like they could have been more creative in showing Harry is possessed by Voldemort.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I hear that. Yeah, I didn't catch that one, but
I did not like it. I think about it a lot. too much. Okay, how about Essence of Book.
I gave it half.
Yep.
Half. I'm pretty upset about this one. Because first of all, if you can do a whole classroom of Patronuses, how hard is it to have a stag just run in one direction and then run in another direction? You know what I mean?
Talking about at the very beginning.
Right at the very beginning where, Dudley and Harry are being chased down by Dementors. And this whole thing of, it's just a ball of light that's just flying. I'm like, make it a stag. It's a stag. That's what makes it cool. That's what makes Harry Potter really cool. It makes him special, the fact that he can actually make a stag. But the fact that, it's just a ball of light just
and
flying.
And they talk about that also. Right, yeah. In this book, they talk about that it's very, very important that he can do a full...
Very important.
What do they call it? Corporal or something like that.
Yeah.
Whatever it means, can have a full body. It's a big deal. They even talk about it in The Wizarding of Oz. Talk about that.
Yeah, and that's for me, I'm like, you guys completely ditched that. And then later on, you're like, ooh, we know how to do graphic stuff.
later on.
I'm like, come on, guys. What are you doing? What's going on here? And then the basic tone of the whole movie is, it doesn't care. Let's be honest. It doesn't capture the essence of the book. The book is darker. The book is more detailed. The book is more drawn out. You get to really know the characters. There are certain factors about, about even the relationships between creatures and wizards or whatever.
Yes.
There are all these things that they completely skim over. Weasley's our king. That's
Weasley is our king. Yeah.
That's an important thing, And I think, or even the pranks. The pranks are a big part of the book, a huge part of the book, in that they made it so hard, very hard for Umbridge to do her nonsense. And so and they made the pranks more kind of joking, little fireworks. I'm like, come on. And guys, we have seen that whole dragon scene where the dragon swoops down. I'm like, come on, that's Lord of the Rings.
Well, they did make a dragon. I mean, in the book.
They didn't make a dragon. Okay.
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think the fireworks are as impressive, per se, as what I would have imagined from the book, because the book does say that as the fireworks hit each other, they start making different types of fireworks.
Yeah.
And even if you try to use different spells on them, different things happen to the fireworks.
Right.
So it's I do think that they toned down the fireworks.
They really, even the fireworks, You know, you caught me on the dragon, like I was getting carried away. But like, but yeah, like it's for me, it's like you guys completely like ignored certain things that I think make the book really, really special. Mm. But they still, like, what's frustrating is, like, the movie's still good. If you just watch the movie, it's good. But definitely, I removed half a star because I'm like, they ignored a lot of things that were in the book. That would have made maybe the movie even represent the books better. And I feel like people who really follow the books, I mean, before I listened to the book, I didn't care. I just loved it. Mm-hmm. But now that I've listened to the book, I'm like, oh, I wish. Oh, if only they did this. I'm constantly wishing, mm-hmm. you know, throughout the movie. I'm watching it. I'm like, oh, I wish. And I wish I didn't have to do that all the time. but that's just was my experience. And because of that, half a star.
Yeah. I also gave it half a star. Mm. Mostly because, and I kind of said this a little bit in the script part, in making their script make sense, I think that they took away a lot from like the book itself.
Right.
So like we miss out on a lot of things. Like they've kind of changed the tone of certain things. So like I think my biggest examples would be Sirius. Like in the movie, you really get this impression that Sirius just wants Harry to be James. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that was the tone from the book at all. I feel like Sirius felt very trapped in his old house where he didn't want to be. I think he was very, like, he was almost angsty as well, like, as angsty as Harry was, per se. But I think that his underlying thing was not that he wanted Harry to be James, but that, like, I think he did see a lot of James in Harry, and he loved him because of that, but he mostly loved Harry because he wanted Harry to be, like, he wanted to save his friend's kid.
Yeah.
You know, like, it wasn't necessarily that he wants him to be him, but he loves him because he is his best friend's kid.
Mm-hmm.
There's also this undertone the whole time of the treatment of other magical beings.
Right.
So, like, we have the centaurs. We have the we have Hagrid being half giant. Mm-hmm. We have the creature. Yeah, we have creature. We have Dobby. We have the house elves. And they kind of skirt over that. Mm. But, like, that's a thing.
Mm.
When Harry goes for his jury thing that he goes to at the beginning, he looks at the fountain. I think it's like the Fountain of Magical Brethren, and it's like the wizard is up top, and all of the animals are looking up, or magical creatures, I should say, are looking up at him kind of adoringly. And Harry he thinks to himself, like, oh, Hermione would really have an issue with that. And I think that this further shows just, like, that view that wizards have, even if it's, like, unintentionally, even if you look at it and you say, like, oh, well, it's not like they're telling the centaurs and the house elf that they're subservient. Like, they're not, but it's a mindset, an underlying mindset that's not necessarily aggressive in nature, but it's an underlying toxic type of view.
Mm-hmm.
And that view is something that leads to someone like Umbridge being acceptable. And we'll talk about Umbridge later. I have a lot of thoughts on her.
Yeah.
But I think in leaving that out, you kind of...
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's something that Fudge can kind of play on a little bit, where he can sit there and be like, no, see, like, Voldemort's not back. Like, because they are in a place where they deny certain things. Like, they deny that they feel that way about centaurs and about... about house elves and Hagrid being half giant.
Yeah, so, I hear that.
Yeah.
I hear that.
And Dobby does play a big role again in this movie. I'm sorry, guys. I'm a house elf person. Like, I just love them. But I also think it is important because it's like, because we do lose Sirius in this movie, and you almost want to sit there and be like, creature's the freaking worst. But actually, like, Sirius wasn't good either. I like this kind of, like, flawed hero that J.K. Rowling creates. Like, she has a lot of flawed heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And I like, I do like, you know, we'll get there with Dumbledore eventually, but she does that a lot where she's like, yeah, this person is good, but also look at these bad things that they did. And because they did these bad things, it leads to these consequences.
Right.
And then just finally, like, I just feel like the tone of Harry, like, Harry works through a lot of anger in this book. Like, there's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of anger. And we don't really get that in this at all. So I think that that is really lost. And then the grief at the end, like the grief of Sirius and just like feeling misunderstood. Like, I think there's a lot of like feelings that she works through that I kind of missed out on.
Yeah, like sometimes one of my things is like, I wish that producers trusted, like, the authors more, you know, to be like, yeah, like, the fact that people loved the books, you know, they have to, like, at least respect that, you know, to a certain extent. Because I think there comes a point where, like, it does start to come across as disrespect. And Lord of the Rings, you know, you see a little bit of that with Tom Bombadil. Like, they remove a whole character that is, like, so massive and so big, and it's like, why did you do that? Because, you know, people love that character,
and he was a really cool character.
And so that, for me, that's a big issue, because it's like, okay, you guys, like, it's all about the entertainment, but it's like, as we nowadays, as we're like growing up, and especially in the time that we're living in now, a lot of stuff people are going backwards and going like, oh, that movie was crappy.
Yeah.
That wasn't really actually good. That actually was a crappy movie. Ugh. You know, ditch that. Mm. And the timelessness gets lost sometimes, because you lose, because the writer is very thoughtful, is intentional, is strategic. And so, like, Harry Potter is a timeless book. Timeless. Yeah. You know, I was at a, you know, at a camp, like, where it was like 14 year olds. So, like, I mean, when it came out, were they even alive? I don't think they were alive. Like,
I don't even think they were alive when they came out.
And so
I, like, you and I grew up with them coming out.
So right, exactly.
No way that they were alive.
Right. And so, like, it's like, and when Harry Potter came out, they all went wild. So there's a timelessness to a writing, a timelessness to it. But the movies, you know, like, besides the imagery that they provide, there's potential for them to lose the timelessness. You know, like, I get the imagery. I get the, when I'm listening to the book, I imagine the Harry Potter from the movies.
Yeah.
So I get that. But, like, the movies themselves, what the movies are, kind of, like, loses timelessness besides them, like, clinging on to the book.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just a little grievance of mine, but
yeah,
that's the world.
So what would you give for X Factor?
I'll still give it a one.
Yeah, me too.
I'll still give it a one.
Yeah.
Just by virtue of that, like, it's tied to something that's like, it's an asterisk. It's like unstoppable. Like, it's like the X Factor of the movies, it's incredible. Because the movies by themselves are good. The book is that amazing. And them being that, even like, if they were like, half a mile close to the book, I think it'd still be awesome.
Yeah.
You know, because that world, the Harry Potter world, is amazing.
Yeah.
And they still cast really well. They still, like, you know, Umbridge is a new addition. Great casting with that. And, you know, so it's cool. It's cool. Like, I still give it one for that.
Yeah, I still give it one. I still think it's a fun movie. It's Harry Potter. Like, right. It's beautiful to watch. The movie, you know, you see the moving staircases. You have the Room of Requirement. Mm-hmm. Like, all of the DA meetings are super fun. Like,
right.
Ugh, it's just, like, it's just gorgeous to watch. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that one bridge that they have that they're always walking across. Like,
right.
It's just it's just a nice movie to watch. And the thing is, like, when I start watching Harry Potter, like, I just want to keep going. Like, we finish this movie and I'm like, well, time to put the sixth one in. Like, you know, like, right. I just, like, you want to keep watching because the story is very engaging. So I did also give it one. So this movie, Shalom gave, we actually agreed, even though we didn't give, like, the same amount of points to each thing. We both gave it 4.25, so 4.25 stars, which is pretty good.
Yeah,
it's pretty good. Yeah. Okay, so we both kind of agree, like, this movie did some things well and it did some things not so well. So, Shalom, what is something that it really brought to life, and what is something from the book that, like, you really wish had been put in the movie?
Brought to life, like, I mean, for me, it's the same thing. Like I said, the Patronus.
Yeah, love that part.
I love that part. I wish that it was at the beginning. Mm. And since it was so short, I'll give a second one. You know, Quidditch. You know, like, I'm like, bring Quidditch every time. Just bring it back every single time, because it was such a stable thing. Like, it was such a cool thing. And also Ron's character's development is kind of huge there. Like, was now all of a sudden in the next, you know, in the next movie, Ron is kind of good at Quidditch.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, they don't really build up to that. And so, like, I wish that there was there. And Weasley's our king is the, you know, top hit of the century.
Weasley is our king.
That's the hit of the century. So, I'm like, guys, that you could have done that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, something that I thought that they did really, really well in this movie is I loved how they brought Umbridge to life. I just thought that they did a phenomenal job. Everything from her wardrobe to her office to her, like, evil quill that, like, takes your blood. Like, I can't even look at that scene. Like, so when I actually look away when it says I won't tell lies, like, we can't, like, can't even look at that scene.
It's just a weird part of the body to, like,
it hurts cut. Your hand. Like, freaking me out just thinking about it. But I just thought that they did a great job with her. I was so impressed. Mm-hmm. And I really loved in their transitions that's where they were bringing in the Daily Prophet. Like, that's where they were showing the headlines. And, like, because that was such a big part of the book, was that the Daily Prophet is just telling lie after lie after lie about Harry and Dumbledore. So, like, I thought that was super, super clever. Such a great way to bring that to life. I love all the proclamations on the walls. Mm. Like, and Filch is hanging them up, and you just see them go up and up, and all these, like, educational decrees on the walls. I really enjoyed that. I thought that was super cool, super cool. I also love the Thestrals. I thought that really was cool. Gorgeous.
Well done.
Like, really well done. Mm. They look great. It was, like, exactly how I imagined it.
Yeah.
I couldn't even believe how great it looked. Like, I really liked that.
Mm-hmm.
For something that they left out that I, like, dearly, dearly wish was in it, St. Mungo's. I love, that scene. Love when I love when Arthur Weasley gets the stitches and Molly's like, it sounds to me like you're trying to sew your skin back together. And Arthur's like, well, that's kind of the idea. And she just, like, freaks out. Like,
Arthur just wants to be a normal person. Yeah, Arthur just wants to be, like, a muggle. He just wants to be, like, he just wants to, like, just do his thing and like, drive a car.
That's all he wants.
Go shopping.
Use the subway. Oh, that's another scene that I love. I love when he's, like, just puts his hand over the subway thing. He doesn't realize that everybody has the cards.
Yeah. But the same amount, you're right. The same amount was seen. It's like, that was really cool.
And that's when we see Lockhart again.
Yes.
And,
yes.
Like, there's more there. Like, we see Neville's parents. And, like, we get to kind of see, like, I think the other thing about this book is, like, we are kind of seeing the devastation of what happened before, you know? And they talk about it more in the book, but it's, like, all the Death Eaters escape from Azkaban, right? There's a bunch of Death Eaters that escape from Azkaban. And there are more – all these students who have had people who were tortured or were killed by these Death Eaters. And – those students are like, oh my gosh, I feel how Harry feels, you know, when being famous for something that's not even really him, you know. So I think we really start to feel more of, like, the devastation of what happened last time and how it's happening again.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that would be the one thing, St. Mungo's. I thought that was cool.
Saint Mangoes.
And I wish Tonks actually had pink hair.
Yeah, they give it purple. It's kind of purplish. Yeah.
It's toned down, I think.
Yeah.
I think they really toned down a lot of the female characters in these books. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going on, like, a tirade here or whatever, like a feminist tirade. But, like, I really do feel like they toned down a lot of characters. Tonks is one of them. Where she's an Auror. Like, she's BA. And they really, I feel like she barely has a role. And then on top of that, Ginny, this is a book where we really start to see Ginny, like, come out of her shell a lot. You know, she's the one who helps Harry break into Umbridge's office to talk to Sirius.
Right.
And she's the one who comes up with that whole idea. Like, and she's also the one who tells Harry to, like, get over himself. Like, you weren't possessed by Voldemort. Like, there's no way you could be possessed in ways that Hermione isn't even able to break through to Harry. Like, Ginny's a really powerful, strong woman, young woman in this series, and I feel like we don't really we don't get to see that side of her at all.
Yeah, that's why I wish it was like an actual, like, series. Yeah. You know, like, because it gives that development of, like, and bringing in different characters into the fray. And I, like, but at the same time, like, I really think, you know, coming back to kind of trust the authors, just trust the authors with the direction they went with, and figure it out. Figure out how to bring their characters that are important, the characters that are important to the author, make them important in the movie, because those kind of consistencies are just so important, you know. And because you then could just wish, you're like, oh, I wish that was, like, better, or not better, but I wish that was there. And yeah, that would be better, you know, like. And and it's weird, again, coming back, weird when the movie is already, like, really good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean,
it's a weird feeling. It kind of tears you up a little bit.
I mean, it's still got a good rating from us at the end of the day. Yes. Like, it's still good. So, I think often in adaptations, like, you're given the really hard role of having to cut things.
Yeah.
And paste it together and, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that's difficult. Mm-hmm. So I think I want to start with Dumbledore's decision not to talk to Harry. Like, what do you think about that? Do you think that was a good idea, a bad idea? What do you think?
I think it's a complex situation. Like, you want to save Harry, and you think you thought that was the best thing to do. And so, you know, at least we know it's not sinister. I wish Harry would have been told, like, hey, this is the situation. But I get why he doesn't tell him. So I get it. I get where Dumbledore is coming from.
Yeah.
I get it. Yeah.
I feel like he's in a really, really hard place. Cause it's like,
it's
like, are you going to sit there and tell Harry, who's 15, this 15-year-old kid, like, hey, I think that you could be open to being possessed by Voldemort. And we're going to, like, I don't know what we're going to do about that. And, like, we want to keep you close, but we also don't want to isolate you. But we also, you know, like, I feel like it's just a really, really hard place to be. It's like, how much do you tell? And also, like, I mean, Harry feels this way in the book where he's like, he almost runs away from Grimmauld Place because he's like, I can put all these people in danger because Voldemort can see my thoughts. Like, he knows what I'm feeling. And, like, yes, I can see what he's doing, but, like, what if he possesses me? Like, what if that happens?
Right.
So it's like, and that, you know, that ultimately leads to Sirius's death.
He does.
Is that, you know, Harry does let a vision in and he does believe it despite Hermione being like, let's logically think about this.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's just, I feel like it's a really hard place to be in. I think Dumbledore was in a really rough spot. It's one of those things where it's like, I feel like Dumbledore was in a rough spot, but it's like, I think if Dumbledore thought about it a little bit more, he would have been like, Harry's highly emotional. I should do something, or like, or he's gonna
do something dumb, or find someone to, like, watch him and, like, and make sure that he's okay. You know,
who's like, not Madungus, like. Yeah. The worst.
Yeah, that was interesting. It's kind of like, it's like, but then at the same time, you're like, you need people to, like, to do their job.
Yeah.
You know?
You have to delegate sometimes.
You have to delegate. Like, and so it's kind of weird. It's because everyone is busy doing their thing. Hagrid is off in the mountains or something, you know, like, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely difficult.
Yeah.
So what about Umbridge? We need to talk about her.
Yeah.
I think Umbridge is a very interesting character in that, like, she's not a Death Eater, but she clearly, like, sympathizes with their cause and is, like, she benefits a lot. Like, she benefits a lot from Voldemort coming back at this time. And I think she benefits a lot from Fudge being so paranoid. Like, she, and they don't talk about this in the movie, but, like, she's the one who sends the Dementors after Harry because she's crazy enough to be like, you know what will get me power? What will get me power is helping Fudge. And Fudge is paranoid about Harry and Dumbledore right now. I'm going to get rid of Harry Potter. I also think that this is a really interesting view of society because it's like that take on, like, most people don't take the law to that extent most of the time. Like, Dumbledore literally says, like, when have we ever had a full Wizengamot for the, like, the simple act of underage wizardry. Like, this is ridiculous. But it's, like, one of those things where it's, like, sometimes, like, little misdemeanors, depending on, like, if people want to get rid of you, like, what their intention is, like, they can use that to do, to, like, for their purpose. Like, they can, sometimes the law can be twisted in such a way to fulfill the purpose of the people in power.
Yeah, a more sinister, like, intention. Like, where it's, like, you know, you know, and, like, you know, the whole point is Fudge wants to, like, remove the whole idea that Voldemort is back.
Yes.
Which for me is crazy. Like, I'm like, it's crazy. But Umbridge is like, Umbridge is weird for me because I'm like, okay, you act like a Death Eater.
Yeah.
You like Slytherins, you know, like you, like, which is kind of like Death Eater-ish, you know? And at the end of the day, it's kind of like, it's like she does, you would think she works for Voldemort. But I think that, in my mind, I'm like, I think she knows what's happening. I think she knows, she senses it. She's an opportunist, and I think she's sensing the changes. And even, like, because even, like, her whole, like, just the way she treats the centaurs, the way she, like, all everything she does, you can tell that she definitely supports Voldemort's propaganda.
Yeah, I agree.
Without even directly supporting Voldemort. And I think that...
Or being on his inner circle, necessarily.
Right, or without being on his inner circle. Yeah. And I think that she's an opportunist and she is... she doesn't really have, like, any loyalty, per se, to anything or anyone but herself.
Yeah.
But she will find anything that, like, will advance her. And right now, it's Fudge and his paranoia.
Yep.
Whilst at the same time, she's, like, she does want to be, like, a you know, later on you find out, like, she wants to be, like, pure, like, I don't even know if she's pure blood or anything. Because I feel like she's lying, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, she's just an opportunist.
Yeah.
Massive, massive opportunist. Kind of like the typical, like, corrupt politician.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what she reminds me of.
Yeah.
She, to me, is, I just hate her. Every part of her.
She's terrible.
And it's just, like, the whole thing of, like, you deserve to be punished. Like, when she says that to Harry, I'm like, what is wrong with you?
Right.
Like, you are wild. Absolutely insane.
You're a horrible person.
But it also, for me, it's, like, it shows how, like, wild Fudge has gotten at this point because he doesn't even care that, like, she's going about doing basically evil things in order to, like, further his cause.
Yeah.
It's like that to me is wild, like, as far as, like, power grabs go. But
yeah.
I thought that they did a great job portraying her in this movie and just how evil she is. But that Dementor attack thing, like, that's insane to me.
Yeah.
Like, to go to a length like that, and then this is the part that gets me. This is the part that absolutely gets me. When they're in the court scene, And she's like, it sounds to me like you're saying that the ministry sent something, sent like a Dementor after this child. And it's like, and she did that. She did that. She's twisting the situation. Like, can you even believe, like, what kind of, like, gall do you have to be able to do something like that?
Yeah. Like, she
just straight up lie.
Yeah, she lies really well. She, like, she's absolutely, like, a very, you know, that typical corrupt politician, very good with words, will pick up any position that allows them to advance. Mm-hmm. Any position. And that's just something that, like, is maybe makes it even more frustrating for her, because, I mean, Malfoy, I don't like Malfoy, but he's Team Voldemort all the way, you know. But I find her more frustrating because she is not really supporting anyone. She's really about, like, herself. Yeah. And you know what? When Voldemort comes, she transitions naturally. It's not even...
Like, easily
has a position... a high position of power in the ministry. And so, like, it's kind of like she's just that kind of person. And I think sometimes it's like it's a very interesting, you know, when you look at politics nowadays, like you see people who have absolute strong beliefs and like we believe this and we believe this. And you know, like, and you see that nowadays it's clear you've got your right wing, you've got your left wing, you've got your moderates. And for me, the person that frustrates me the most is the person that can read all those spaces and be like, who is dominant right now, and shift themselves just to fit with whoever is dominant at the moment, and then like change later on, like, and say, no, I used to believe this, but now I believe this, like, so like and then like shift themselves so they naturally transition and become someone else, you know, rather than someone who's like, I genuinely believe in this. This is what I genuinely believe in. I'm not just saying this for politics. For me, I mean, there are people who are a Hitler who genuinely believed what he was doing, and horrible, horrible person. And but then, like, Hitler, there were like career politicians at that time who were like, oh, Hitler, this is the dominant school of thought. And those are the guys who were the, you know, the foot soldiers, so to speak, who like helped him accomplish what he needed to accomplish. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, I think that's, I find those people a little more frustrating because they just don't care about anything but themselves. And Umbridge is the perfect representation of the career politician who is corrupt, shifty, just to advance their purpose.
Yeah. I think she's almost scarier in a way than someone like Voldemort. I mean, like, it's like what you said, like, Voldemort genuinely like, believes what he believes. Like, he's like a Hitler type of personality. Mm-hmm. But Umbridge is like that everyday kind of sneaky personality where it's like almost people are like, whoa, can you believe like she said that like awful thing about house elves or centaurs or like whoever, like, you're like, whoa, okay, girl, you went too far. But it's like, she, when she has that foothold of power, and we see this in the seventh one, where it's like, she's literally spreading terrible propaganda about muggles and about muggle-born people. And like, she literally makes up that like, if you're muggle-born, that you can steal powers from wizards. Like, she literally makes that up, and she's sending people to Azkaban for it. She's killing people. Mm-hmm. Like, she's literally doing that. Mm-hmm. And she gets that foothold in there because she's playing off of the advantage of, like, what's happening within society. Mm-hmm. So, she's almost scarier in some ways.
Yeah, because she's the one who makes the dreams a reality. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's you know, when you have a ruthless like dictator or a ruthless president or something like who says all sorts of like nonsense, sometimes it's the people that are behind the policies. Usually, like, sometimes you have someone who talks nonsense and it's like, yeah, that person talks nonsense, they don't accomplish anything, like, just nonsense. But they're the people who say like racist, hurtful things, but they are actually accomplishing policies that destroy lives. It's not them. I mean, it's not them who's like doing all the little detailing. it's minds and people who are well skilled and trained at executing plans. And those are the people that are really scary, because they make those dreams reality. It's the person who designed Auschwitz, you know, like the person who said, you know how we can kill a lot of, you know, Jews at a time, is let's put them in a room and let's just gas them. You know, like it's the person who creates the mechanism that allows great evil to succeed. And so that, for me, that's, you know, what Umbridge for me represents is it's that kind of person.
Yeah, speaking of Umbridge, I'm just thinking about this one part in the book, and they actually change it in the movie when they're getting rid of Umbridge at the end. They're in the Forbidden Forest, and they're hoping that Gorp will take, will fight Umbridge, but then actually the centaurs end up coming, and the centaurs take Umbridge away. In the book, Hermione actually says to the centaurs, like, we're innocent, we're children, like, you know, you don't hurt foals, and they're like, well, you're almost an adult at this point, and then Hermione says, like, we were just hoping that you would take care of Umbridge. And then the centaurs are like, see, like, they're already think that they're, like, better than us, like, all that. Like, and that's something that you don't really see from Hermione. Like, what do you think of that?
Oh, like, yeah, that she Hermione is very, you know, she's also a strategist. She's like the kind of person who, she's kind of like the Umbridge, but in the opposite direction. You know, she knows how to make things happen. She knows, you know, how to, she saves Harry in numerous, you know,
times. Harry would die without her.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, I think she becomes Minister of Magic.
That's what the internet says.
That's what the internet says. I believe it. And, but she does have that sort of like, way of thinking. She's very strategic. She's very well planned. And in that situation, I don't think, you know, honestly, I don't think, like, she, obviously she lies. She lied to them because she was, like, trying to save her skin in that moment. She was hoping that Grope is the person who takes care of Umbridge. But I think it just shows, like, how shifty and, like, in terms of, like, how smart she is and how she's able to, she's good at speaking. She's just, she's amazing. Like, she's really good at what she does. And so I don't blame her for what she does. I don't think it's, I think it's a bad thing, you know.
Well, maybe the centaurs, though, felt very offended when she said that. Because like, they're like, see, you're trying to use us. Like, it's already ingrained in your society to think that we're lower than you.
Right, exactly. Like, in a sense, I'm like, wouldn't you think, and I'm trying to process this whilst I talk. It's kind of like, I'm like, okay, the centaurs are kind of angry already. And so there's almost an irrational way of thinking. I mean, they tried to kill one of their own people because he said yes to teaching.
Yeah.
So they're like a little irrational, you know, but for good reasons. And so for me, I look at that, I'm like, okay, like if there was a situation where, like, you know, like if I was the centaurs and, you know, someone was like, yeah, like we were hoping like you would take care, we brought her here, she's been so bad, and we're hoping you like, we brought her here, like, suppose you guys can like take her for her. I'd have been like a little proud, like I'm like, oh yeah, we, you know, we're BA. But I also see like
I see it as like, oh, so you want us to do your dirty work? Like, you can't handle her, so you want us to handle her? Like, are you kidding me? Like,
Because in the movies, they're talking about how, like, the ministry is limited.
Yeah, they're limiting.
You know, the centaur's territory. And so it's kind of like, you know, she's our enemy. We're both kind of like sharing the same enemy right now. So let's just like get rid of her. I think the centaurs are just in a state.
They're already in a state.
They're in a state.
And then she says something kind of insensitive. And then they like...
Yeah.
Then it just sets them off even more.
Yeah. Which, I don't know if it was a bad... I'm still deciding if it's a bad thing or not. But I'm like, okay, if you're already in a state where you're just angry, was there anything she was going to say that was going to like hold them off? You know?
That's true.
It's one of those things.
That's true.
Yeah.
So what do you think about the prophecy when we, like, finally hear it?
Team Trelawney. Yay! when you listen to it, you're like, wow, this is crazy. Like, there's so much, like, there's a destiny element that you, like, gets dropped on you. You're like, oh my gosh, like, this is a destiny thing. All yeah. right, like, let's see how this goes. So I thought it was really well done.
I think this kind of goes back to our question about Dumbledore. It's like, I get why Dumbledore didn't want to talk to Harry about this and uh-huh. didn't want to talk to Harry this year, because it's like, if he tells Harry about that connection, then he has to tell Harry about the prophecy. Mm. And then in telling Harry about the prophecy, it's like, you're telling a 15-year-old, like, okay, so, like, the most evil wizard of all time is going to keep trying to kill you until he finally does kill you, or you're going to have to kill him. Mm. And it's like, could you imagine dropping that on the shoulders of, like, a 15-year-old? Like, I just think that that's a lot to hear and to try to understand. Yeah. So I do – it makes me understand, like, Dumbledore's decision. Do I still think that maybe Dumbledore could have done it more tactfully? Yes, I do. I think there was a better way to do it. But at the same time, like, even maybe using Sirius a little bit more, but I don't know. Sirius is also kind of like a spaz in this book a little bit. I think he feels not very useful and like he can't really do anything, and he's stuck in his parents' house that he hated.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think Sirius has his own problems, so maybe Sirius wasn't the best. But then, like, having Snape try to teach Harry is just, like, awful.
Yeah, but we also get to see a little bit of Snape as well, like, in terms of his character, like, he's, you know, you get to see James a little bit, and the book really touches on this, really stays, and kind of, like, enter Harry's obsession with, like, adults, like, his obsession with, like, obsession with anyone who he looks up to, like, wait, he really did that? You know, like, wanting them to be perfect, and I think that, you know, like, you get to see Sirius's, Snape's kind of, like, a little bit of the story, a little bit of his story. And I think that becomes very important at the end.
Yeah. So what do you think about James? Do you think James was a bad person?
I think he was. I think he was a terrible person. Horrible person. I hear that he changes. And for me, it's this storyline that kind of, like, blows my mind off, like, horrible person changes in order to be with a good girl, right? And then gets good girl, right? And for me, it's such an old storyline that we've seen from time to time, that I think it's toxic. It's a toxic storyline, because it's like, okay, like, so she changed him? Is that what we're saying here? Is that, you know? And so, like, because in the book it says, like, yeah, like, around year seven, like, he changed a bit, you know. And for me, it's kind of like, you know, because he used to jinx anyone. It wasn't just Snape. He used to jinx anybody.
He's very prideful.
He jinx anybody. He was a bully. And so that, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you have the hot take this week, but, you know, you know, my snippet hot take is if he had treated Snape better, they would not have died. But he only cared for her. He didn't care about him. Like, he only cared about her, about Lily. And, like, I think that Snape would have done, like, even more to protect them if James had treated them better. Because, like, I think James would not have wanted to go to, you know, to Lily and James and say, hey, you guys are in trouble. Because why did he go around, like, kind of went around to Dumbledore? It's like, hey, Dumbledore, rather than reaching out to Lily and James saying, hey, you guys are in danger, and actually coming up with a plan together. But, like, I feel like, and also maybe Snape would not have been a Death Eater. You know, I feel like there's so many possibilities. If James was a better person, you know, was James is a villain. Snape is a villain. And as he becomes a villain, I mean, he, you know, later on we'll find out he's good. But, like, but Snape becomes a Death Eater, but James is no better, you know? He's no better. He's just a version, you know, that is just, like, where it's, like, just arrogant and hateful. So
I do feel like it's one of those things where it's, like, we're all kind of dumb when we're kids, but it's, like...
Yeah.
just the book, like, again, I've talked about this before. The level of bullying that was allowed at Hogwarts is appalling to me. Like, I just can't believe, like, I can't believe how much bullying is allowed. And so I agree. I think that there probably is a certain level of that bullying that leads Snape down the Death Eater path. Mm. On the other hand, I still do believe that, like, that house, like the Slytherin house, unfortunately, has that – they already have that string of people who want to become Death Eaters. So, like, because they're constantly around other Slytherins, like, I think that you just get drawn to it. And Lily does confront Snape about this. She says to him, like, hey, all of your friends are Death Eaters. And he's like, well, you know, Potter's no better. Potter's jinxing everyone. Like, what do you have to say about that? And she's like, yeah, but they're not, like – you know, James isn't saying that he wants to join Voldemort when he leaves. When he leaves, right. But I do think that she was a better influence on him and kept Snape kind. Mm. So I think that it's kind of the, like, the people that you're around really does affect the way that you view the world and what you do. So it's like I don't think we can 100% with all certainty say that, like, if Snape wasn't bullied, he wouldn't have become a Death Eater, because I think he still has all that influence of the Slytherin house. Like, Lucius Malfoy was one of the prefects in his house when he was in school, when Snape was in school. So it's like, and Lucius becomes one of the top Death Eaters.
Right.
So it's like, there's a lot of influence here is what I'm saying. So it's like, I don't know that we can with 100% accuracy or, like, we can guess that that would happen, but, like, maybe he wouldn't. And he didn't know when he handed the prophecy. Snape did not know that Voldemort was going to assume that it was Harry.
Mm-hmm. But he does find out later. But I think that the other thing is that the house system itself is messed up.
Yeah.
Right? It's a messed up system. Yeah. And it isolates and allows someone to be like, oh, I guess I'm bad since I'm a Slytherin.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I'm a terrible person. And so it's like, I think when I think of Snape, I'm like, okay, Snape was on the bus with Lily. And they're both, like, you know, like, kind of
on the train.
And so, and I feel like the both the treatment that James does of Snape, and then even like the perspectives in the whole, like, in the book, you see that, like, people are leaning on James a lot, like, where it's like making James look really great. And I feel like you know, J.K. Rowling really sets us up, because we're like, oh, James and Lily, oh my gosh. And then you realize, hold on, James is a horrible person, right? And it almost kind of, like, kind of makes us, like, kind of look to Snape a little bit differently and be like, okay, like, I can imagine someone who's already has got struggles or, like, had a hard upbringing, right? Then that person has a friend who's good, who's sweet, who's awesome. And then there's James, enter James, and James is just bullying him.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't he retreat even more into his house, into his friends with Lucius and everyone else, right? Why wouldn't he retreat to them? Because he's getting bullied by the other house.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's one of those things where I think that there is that element of like, where, and you know, the flawed hero thing comes to Dumbledore later on. But, like, I feel like it's just such an important thing to be like, hey, like, you know, James is also a villain in this story. And some of it is like, there's almost like a cause and effect. We don't even know what exactly the cause and effect is, but things would have been different. It would have been for the better if he wasn't such a, you know, jerk.
I do also think that this is the beginning of J.K. Rowling kind of showing this, like, Harry looks like his dad, but his personality is like his mom. And I think that it's, I think she likes to play with this idea of like, you can look like someone and have, like, the, like, you can look a certain way, but that doesn't mean that you have to be that way.
Right.
Because his mom, it's his mom who saves him in the end. And it's ultimately his mom who, like, he's, you know, he's so interested in his dad the whole time, right? But at the end of the day, in the seventh book, like, it's his mom who I think gets him through when Voldemort, kills him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he, comes back. Like, it was him doing that, he mirrors his mom.
Yeah, he does.
So, in a lot of ways, I think it's the story is actually more about his mom than his dad. But, mm-hmm. his focus is in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I see that. And it's so easy. But sometimes people are like, you look like your dad, but you got your mother's eyes.
Yeah.
You know? And that's such a theme throughout all the movies and the books.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, like, you know, the mom, the kind, it's love, it's kindness that saves. That saves Harry, you know.
In many ways. Mm-hmm. In many ways. Even in the seventh one, Griphook, if Griphook didn't witness the way that Harry treated Dobby and buried Dobby and, mm-hmm. cared for Dobby, he wouldn't have helped them mm-hmm. get into Gringotts.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many ways that, love is such a big theme here. And it's, that's even when Voldemort, in this movie, when Voldemort's trying to possess Harry, he can't stay in Harry because Harry can genuinely love. In the book, it's a little bit different. They talk about, he's talking about grief.
Mm.
And his love for Sirius, thinking about that is what sends Voldemort out.
Mm.
Which is still love. It's still love at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know, it's definitely
an
interesting thing to think about.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we're going to do the hot take.
Here we go.
By Courtney.
Yay. So I have 1 minute to give you my hot take. Mm-hmm. I am starting the timer now. Okay. So my hot take is that Cho is not just an emotional mess, basically, and that she's not a garbage character.
Mm-hmm.
My proof for this is that I think that we get this story from Harry's perspective, and Harry is very terrible at processing emotion, hence this entire book.
Mm.
He is just awful at processing. He's lashing out and all that. Instead, we have Cho, on the other hand, who actually wants to process correctly, which is to talk about it, to process through her grief, to talk about what happened. And every time she tries to do that, Harry shuts down. And in that way, he actually shuts down the conversation and doesn't allow her to process properly.
Mm.
She actually wants to talk about her emotion. I think she's being really, emotionally intelligent in the situation. Because I think she knows that Harry also needs to process it.
Right.
And that he's not processing it at all. Mm. He's just, shutting down and being angry. So we are just getting this completely, garbage place from Harry. Oh, no. My timer went off.
Timer went off.
I feel so many emotions about this.
Wee.
What do you think, Harry? What do you think about Harry?
What's Hello, I'm Harry. Say? I'm Harry.
I was trying to say, what do you think about Harry?
Yeah, honestly, I think Harry's just a horrible person in this book movie.
Especially to Cho.
Yeah, in the book, you get to see a lot more of his thoughts, and you see he's the state of his thinking is very much kind of on the darker side of things, less. And naturally, Harry's not really an emotions person. The only person that makes him feel, you know, better after Sirius dies is Luna, you know? But Luna is kind of, not really emotional. It's like, that's just how Harry is. Like, he's not an emotional...
He's not an emotional processor.
He's not an emotional processor. And so, anything that's emotional, it's kind of like, ugh, this is, I don't really want to deal with this. So it's one of those things that, and I think Ginny is kind of like that a little bit.
Yeah, I agree.
More confrontational, more don't take that tone with me.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, I can see why Harry and Ginny would be a good fit, because Harry really is not, his personality is more to the point,
mm-hmm.
No emotional, conversation. I mean, Dumbledore has to force him to stay in his office.
Yeah.
To be like, we're going to talk.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to hear me. You're going to hear me out. And so that is just something about his personality. He likes to run away from those kind of situations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that Cho is fine. Like, she's processing stuff. And also, part of it is when you read in the books, she cries the second time. I mean, the first time they cry in the Room of Requirement, she cries when they kiss. But But then
it was wet.
It was wet, right? It was wet. I'm like, oh. but then the second time, it's because he's tactless.
Yeah.
You know, he goes to see, I'm like, you're on a date and you're like, oh, I need to go see this other girl. Like, it's like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Like, what the heck is that? Like, you know, that's so dumb. And so that's something that is where it's like, it's totally unjust when people say, oh, she's just a hot mess. Like, no, the second time she was trying to make him jealous.
Yeah, she was being a little mean the second time.
Yeah, she was being a little mean because he's being tactless. And so, yeah. And so it's one of those things where, Ron and Harry are just, like, clueless.
They're so clueless.
About girls, oh about gosh. The world, you know?
And, the two of them are the
and
worst.
And that's just, yeah.
I do like the scene, though, when after Harry and Cho kiss in the room requirement and they come back and Harry's like, it was wet, she was crying, and then, like, Ron's like, oh, you're that bad, and then Hermione's like, Hermione goes through, like, all of these things that Cho's feeling, and then all these things that Cho's feeling, and Ron's like, no one could, like, feel that way. She's like, not everyone has the emotions of, like, a tease parent. So I think that, I mean, we see this constantly throughout the books. It's like anytime someone starts to, like, cry or get emotional, like, Harry has to look away. Like, he feels like he's like, impeding on something, like, encroaching on a situation where, like, he shouldn't be looking. Like, he doesn't like people. He doesn't want to seem vulnerable to anyone. He doesn't want people feeling like they're being vulnerable to him. Like, he's really, really bad at that. And in the book, especially the fifth book, Hermione is really, like, trying to help him process through a lot of this stuff. She's like, oh, I know you must be feeling this. And he's like, sometimes I think he gets mad when Hermione is, like,
trying to synthesize
him. Yeah, he's trying to, like, sympathize and all that. Like, I think he gets kind of annoyed because he's like, no one knows how I'm feeling. But I really, truly feel like it's unfair when people talk about Cho and they're like, Cho's such a garbage character. Like, I don't even know why Harry liked her. She just cries all the time. She just wanted to be with Harry because she wanted someone who would, like, could talk about Cedric with her. Like, I actually think she's very honest with him. I think she did like him in the fourth book. I think Cedric just got there first. That's what I think. I think she liked him because she genuinely was, like, sad to say no to the Yule Ball.
Yeah, and also, like, okay, you know, let's it's unrealistic, right, for someone, like, where it's like you're dating someone who's had someone that they love to die.
Yeah.
It's unrealistic to not, like, expect them to, like, bring that person up at a certain point.
Yeah.
It's unrealistic. It's going to happen. Yeah. It's like, oh my gosh, like, you know, that is just something that normal people do. I think that, you know, Harry is not my favorite character in that world. You know, for me, McGonagall is, like, top stuff, top shelf. And the Weasleys as a whole, the Weasleys, Team Weasley, all day long. And for me, like, Harry, like, that's one of my biggest struggles with Harry is, like, it's, like, he is judgmental of, like, you know, of people, of even, like, people that, like, of his parents, of his dad. I mean, I think his dad was a jerk. Changed. But I think Harry is, like, a little more, but that's human. You know what I mean? He's, like, he doesn't expect people to be normal. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if that makes sense. Like, he doesn't expect, you know, people to cry when they're supposed to cry. He doesn't expect people to be young, to be youthful. You know, because when you're young, you do stupid things. He doesn't expect that. And you see that with when his judgments of Dumbledore later on.
Yeah.
And so there are things where he doesn't have, like, expectations, you know, of like, how someone
normal
can become...
Normal expectations
of, right, like, of how sometimes one thing can progress to another.
Yeah.
And another and another. And I love how Dumbledore is, like, Dumbledore is ruthless at the end where he's just, like, you know, Sirius should have treated Creature better.
Yeah.
You know, like, straight up. Like, I'm like, Flip, I would not have said it that way. Like I'll find a different
he's
way.
He's, like, straight. He's, like, straight. He's, like, I told Sirius several times to be nice to him.
Right. And Sirius doesn't listen. And so, like, but I think Harry doesn't look at Creature and go, like, wow, this is someone who's been mistreated.
Yeah.
So, like, I shouldn't hate creature.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that that is something that, like, over time, like, there's a powerful line that he says in book seven, movie eight, where he's like, oh, he doesn't say it in the movie, actually, at all.
Who, Harry?
Yeah, he doesn't say it in the movie at all. But where in the book he says, you know, think Tom, and try, you know, for some, like, remorse, something like that. And I thought that was, like, a powerful shift for Harry to change and actually, like, allow someone to shift, to watch the shift, or to give opportunity to someone to say, wow, someone can be dumb and do stupid things and have a moment where they stop, they think, they have remorse, they change and become someone else. Mm-hmm. And so that's just something that Harry just hasn't figured out yet.
Yeah.
And so coming back to the situation with Cho, it's like, I think it's the same thing with any human process. Harry, like, doesn't, like, allow the process to take hold. And so he gets frustrated when someone is in a process and then his mind is already somewhere else. Where he's like, would you just be snogging and just, like, eating, you know, live frogs.
Chocolate frogs. I feel like he's very unfair to Cho here. And, like, I feel for Cho. Like, she's trying her best, you know? And it's like, I think that sometimes we get so caught up in the Harry story that we forget, like, this girl's boyfriend was murdered. And no one believes her either, you know? Like, they're just acting like Cedric's death was nothing. They're brushing it under the rug. And it's like, that's a big deal. Someone she truly, truly cared about was literally murdered by Voldemort. Mm-hmm. And, like, no one's listening to her either.
Right.
So it's like, I think that is, like, a big deal that we should, like, pay attention to.
Right,
like,
I agree.
She feels just as misunderstood. And here's the one person in the whole, like, wizarding world who, like, actually freaking gets it.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even want to talk to her about it. Like,
they're
both hurt in this situation. I think, unfortunately, they end up hurting each other while in their hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I think J.K. Rowling does a great job in showing Harry, you know, like, you know, like, what Harry, how, like, who Harry is, you know, through Cho.
Yeah.
And I thought that was, that's pretty cool, like, ways, like, they're both going through the same thing, but then they really show, like, okay, this is how Cho is processing it, this is how Harry is processing it. And you're right, it's not fair that people, like, pick sides there, like, because no one processes the same way.
Yeah, no one processes grief the same way.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Before we close up, we totally forgot to talk about my favorite character in the whole world, who's introduced in this movie, Luna.
Luna.
I freaking love her.
She's awesome.
I love everything about her. I think she's perfect. I think she's wonderful. Like, I just love Luna so much.
Yeah.
The other thing that I love about Luna is that Harry feels super, like, misunderstood this whole book, and yet she is the most understanding character. And I think this also kind of plays into the Harry just wants to be so cool. Like, I just think he wants to be so cool, right? But he constantly finds himself in the company of people who are, like, in quotes, uncool. Like, he's always with Neville and he's always with Luna. And he wants to impress Cho so much, but he just, like, is constantly in this place of being, like, uncool. I think that Luna, the thing that I really love about Luna is that she's so honest and she's so straight with him. She just, like, the first thing she says to him is, like, we believe you. Like, my dad and I believe you. And she's, like, so unashamed to be herself. Like, she wears her radishes on her ears. And she talks about Nargles and everything. Yeah, like, I think Luna is, like, the epitome of, like, don't be ashamed of who you are.
I think so. And it does challenge Harry, you know, like, where Harry is hanging out with Ron, who's, like, the epitome of try to be something else.
Yeah.
Like, at all costs, you know, and I think that's kind of, like, where he's kind of being pulled in two different directions, where the dad side of him, like, where his dad was, like, a cool guy.
Yeah.
You know, and I think sometimes that's what happens with boys, like with boys sometimes, like, you know, you want to be like your dad. Like, he's like, my dad was cool. I'm going to be like my dad, you know? You don't hear a lot of boys say, I want to be like my mom.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because it's like, yeah, my mom is cool. Like, I like, you know, most boys love their moms to death, you know, right? Like, to death. But though they don't really have that, like, oh my gosh, I want to be as kind and gentle as my mom. Mm. But like, they're like, I want to be like as bold and crazy as my dad, you know, like, and so, so Harry's trying to be like the cool, he wants to be cool, you know, he wants to be like that kind of person who does his thing. But I think that characters like Luna end up being the ones that speak to his heart, you know, like where when he's hurting deeply, like at the end, when he's like really hurting, she's the one who actually manages to like make him feel better. You know, mm-hmm. she's actually who speaks to his heart, to his soul. Mm-hmm. And I think that like that is like constantly challenging that side of him that wants to like pull away from Luna and Neville and all these people who actually like believe him 100% the whole time, support him, are there for him. He just doesn't appreciate them right now. And he definitely comes to that place at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do really love Luna's line at the very end of this movie. I can't remember if she actually says it in the book as well, where she's like, you know, things that we lose often have a way of coming back to us, like, even if it's in the most unexpected way. And I don't know if this is meant to be a hint at, like, seeing Sirius again with the Resurrection Stone or not, but, like, I've always kind of interpreted that line that way. Like, like, you do get things back, or like you remember people and things like that. So
That's awesome. All right, cool. So we are going to round up.
Yes, we are. Thank you so much for listening again. We only have two more episodes left after this week.
Yeah.
It went so fast.
So fast.
Yeah, so we are actually going to do 7 part 1 and 2 and 1. Because it's one story, so we're just going to do that as one episode. It's probably going to be a really long episode.
Mm.
We have many thoughts.
Many thoughts. Yeah, like, and we'll try and keep it short. Like, I think it's not, we'll bunch some stuff together.
Yeah.
We'll rate both the movies as one. And,
Cool.
That'll be awesome. Thank you so much for joining us on this nerdy journey.
See you next week.